On today's College Football Inquirer, the results of Saturday have shaken up the college football playoff picture. Got that first ranking reveal on Tuesday. What does it all mean? Who still has a chance? Who's still alive? And whose hopes are dead? Plus, potential firing, potential change in the loveliest village on the plains. Hugh Freeze did exactly what he couldn't do against Kentucky. Only put up 3 points in a loss at home, and Auburn may be looking for a new coach. We'll talk about it all on the College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. I am Andy Staples. I am the one in the weird location, but I have a lovely lovely table setting behind me, guys. I think we did a good job here at this tablescape. House.
You got a little tablescape for the fall? Is it autumnal?
Looks like you haven't eaten at all. You haven't touched the dining room table.
Well, I was nervous about that. There were paper plates in the cabinets, and that's where we put our pizza on. So
nice. Very good.
Yes, I am in Columbus. I was at Ohio State Penn State yesterday. That game didn't shake up the college football playoff race at all because Ohio State is awesome. Julian Sain is awesome. Jeremiah Smith is awesome. Carnell Tate is awesome. And yeah, they're going to keep winning. But guys, there were so many games around the country that potentially could shake up who could be in the college football playoff. And it's not necessarily even the top of the rankings. It's the teams that are sitting there in the 8 through 18 spots that you're wondering, okay, where are they going to wind up now? So let's start with an elimination game in Knoxville, Tennessee. Oklahoma goes to Tennessee. Tennessee kind of offensively dominates early. Oklahoma hangs on, has the scoop score. R. Mason Thomas, while he's being injured, finishes the run, scores, keeps them going. And then Oklahoma finds its running game as the game goes on. And they've still got a shot. Tennessee is probably out. But what is that feeling like when you're Oklahoma, when you know you still have a shot, but next up on the docket is Alabama?
Yeah, well, not only that, their whole run, right, is like really hard. They get Missouri, and then, of course, they have to finish the season with A&M. So, I mean, they've got like one of the most, of all the teams sort of jockeying to win out and get a at-large bid, Oklahoma's remaining schedule may be like the toughest of any of them. What they did on Saturday night certainly surprised me. I didn't think they would go to Knoxville. You could see that environment was pretty incredible and actually pull off a win. But they did it, and they did it on the ground, like you said, Andy, and they did it defensively with three sort of big turnovers, including that scoop and score and a big interception as well late in the game. And it was impressive. It was a really gutty sort of win.
Oklahoma is technically alive. I don't think they're going to make the playoff. I felt like last night was the game between the premier teams of the second tier of the SEC, and that's okay. Given the circumstances, like we set this game up on Thursday, we talked about where these programs are in the long term. By the way, I hope Tennessee does not create a taboo thing with their black uniforms the way Georgia did after Alabama killed them years ago.
They've had better results with them, so I think they're probably okay.
That's true. That's true. I thought they handled it really well. It was a great environment. Knoxville continues in the last couple of years to look like theatrically one of the best settings in college football in primetime.
Yeah.
They really know how to dress the set, so to speak. Another lackluster game from Mateer, the mind wonders maybe how healthy he is. I am impressed with the way they came back. This felt even. I wasn't really surprised by the result had it gone either way. Ultimately, this was fine. This was good for Oklahoma long term, because I think this plus maybe one more win, Andy, I would push back and say, like, it's not about surviving to get a playoff bid you're probably not going to get. It's surviving to create some proof of concept in this new era at Oklahoma football and give Venables a little runway.
I think you're probably right about that. And I think that win helps him a ton. Probably winning one more is fine at this point. If he can win one more, and if you win two or three, I mean, if obviously you win three, you're in the playoff. That's fantastic. If you win two and you're 9-3, then you've shown, yes, this is an improvement. One more step and you're in the playoff. I think that's all you're looking for at Oklahoma. The team that beat Oklahoma in the Red River game also was playing an elimination game for itself yesterday. Texas was playing Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt could lose one. But this was a fascinating game because Texas jumped all over Vanderbilt and then almost found a way to give it away at the end.
We finally saw the Arch Manning that we were all sort of talking about for the last 3 years, basically, or more. We finally saw that guy kind of step up and play 25 of 33, 328 yards, 3 touchdowns. And I think at one point they had a 31-10 lead. I want to say that was the highest it got. And then, Vandy and Diego charged back and probably should have recovered a really well done onside kick, and it kind of squirted out of bounds. But that was really impressive. I just wonder now, is this going to be the sort of energy shot or whatever momentum that you give Arch, the confidence maybe, and the rest of the way? I don't know. Maybe they can find a way. I mean, if they win out, which would include a win over A&M at the end of the year, they're probably in the playoff.
Hey, yes. No picks, no sacks for Arch. This was a complete sheet. It was almost more about what he didn't do than it was about what he did. This was a top 10 opponent. I don't feel like I need to give the PSA anymore, but if you look at Vanderbilt, you think this was a top 10 opponent, okay? They came in ranked in the top 10. This game, more than really any that I've seen in the last couple weeks even, reminds me that we are headed to the NFL-ication of the Southeastern Conference, where the balance is just so insane. And this was a great example of parity, because as good as Texas was early, Vanderbilt is kind of unkillable, man. Like, they really are. They are that team. I think every Texas fan now would exit the last 2 years worth of games saying, like, all right, we probably came into the Southeastern Conference thinking Vanderbilt was the doormat. And if that's the doormat, it's pretty hard here.
Yeah. Yeah. But they're handling it. I mean, they are in a good position. They're off this week. They go to Georgia. And to your point, Ross, if they win out, they do make the college football playoff. They will have earned it, too, because they'll have had to beat Georgia and Texas A&M.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't have the fourth quarter they had against those teams. Like, you have to just jump on them and stay on.
Well,
they're really
are flawed. They are better, and Arch is better, and that's what's going to draw our eye. But you had a disastrous quarter and a half on the back end yesterday, and you had a pretty disastrous 2.5 quarters on the front end against Mississippi State the week before. So this team exiting, I mean, honestly, we have not seen dominant Texas since Red River, which was going on a month ago because they squeaked past Kentucky. And so we haven't seen the four-quarter statement yet. But you're right. They have enough of a resume in front of them to beat two top five teams, and they would easily be in.
Yeah. You know, Godfrey, you mentioned the sort of NFL-cation of the SEC, which we talked about the parity just in general and how it's been. And, you know, Kirby made those comments 3 or 4 weeks ago about how the margins are so tighter. Think about the bottom of the SEC historically. You mentioned the Vanderbilt, obviously, Mississippi State, Kentucky, and, you know, think about how close that Mississippi State was in some of their games this year. They finally broke that streak and got the win at Arkansas, broke the 16-game SEC losing streak. But, like, everything is just feels so close. Think about Auburn, who's at the bottom of the league and probably about to fire their coach. Probably should have, could have beat Georgia, Oklahoma. Like, everything is just so tight. And we're seeing that. We saw that again this past weekend. It's, the league is pretty wild. And really, this is throughout the country. We're seeing this throughout the country, but I don't think we're seeing it as much anywhere except like we're seeing it in the SEC.
Yeah, and I don't know, this is not to, like, don't confuse this with us saying the SEC is just awesome and so much better than everybody else.
Right.
We're saying the SEC teams are evenly matched amongst each other. There's a difference there. There is a distinction there.
And I think
I'm telling
you the deepest league, right? I think it is the deepest.
Agreed, yes.
Probably it might not be the easiest way to do this in a talk radio sense this year is it's the deepest league. The most exceptional teams might be in the other league.
Right. Yeah. The team I saw in Columbus yesterday is more talented than any of these SEC teams we're talking about.
The team from Bloomington that I saw yesterday here in Maryland is probably the most complete team, you know, that I've watched in the country this year. So I think there's a reason, that Ohio State and Indiana are 1-2. And then you have all these SEC teams grouped together. I think that's fair assessment.
So we'll see what happens with those games, because obviously Oklahoma and Texas will just have to win out if they're going to do it. Another team that has a tough path of winning out but is still mathematically alive is USC in the Big Ten. USC went to Nebraska. It was not the prettiest win, but it was a win. I thought Nebraska played really well in this game, guys. I the way I set this game up is I said, you know, USC is a terrible matchup for Nebraska. Nebraska feels like the type of team USC can run the ball on, and when USC runs the ball effectively, they usually kick somebody's butt. That's not what happened. Nebraska played good defense. They kept making USC's offense shoot itself in the foot, getting bad down in distances. And if Dylan Raiola doesn't get hurt, I think we probably see a different ending to that game. But USC kind of gutted it out and now is in a position where if they win out, they're in, but they have to play Iowa and Oregon down the stretch. Mm. And that's no easy task.
Yeah.
Again, to reset, I would say this is maybe the second or third best of the second tier. No one here is expecting USC, based off of the performance the last couple of weeks, to go in and run the table. Yes, they could get back in the conversation, Andy, because they could have a good Iowa talking point and then a great resume bullet in beating Oregon and Eugene. That team last night's not going to do either one of those things.
No. No, and that's the issue.
Yeah, and you wonder if Matt Rhule, if he could do it again, he would not try a 52-yard field goal and maybe pin them deep or just go for it, you know, at that point.
Ross, that's signed one. Extension thinking. Okay.
Yeah.
Extension sign, baby.
Yeah.
Screw
it. We had one coach who signed the extension the week of lose at home in this big blackout game, and then the other coach, Rhett Lashley, pull off this crazy comeback and overtime win at SMU over Miami. Those are the extension games.
I'm glad you brought that one up, Ross, because that's where I was headed next, was Dallas for SMU Miami, because the ACC is in a tizzy right now. So Rhett Lashley, yes, signs the extension. He's staying at SMU, so Arkansas is open. We think Auburn's about to open. These are jobs that both would probably at least want to inquire about Rhett Lashley. He is not going anywhere. And this was a great win for SMU in a game coming off a gut punch loss at Wake Forest.
Yeah.
So they come in, and look, Scott Simon's defense has been good the entire time that they've been there, but they really did hamstring Miami's offense and give themselves a chance to win that game, because it took them a while to get going, but they finally did come back.
Yeah.
I want to write, I'm going to put it on a post-it note. Okay, guys, next September, when Miami's undefeated and they're beating everybody by 21 points, and we all talk about them as a lock for the playoff, we need to just give ourselves this little reminder annually that at some point in conference play, I'm not saying this is akin to the Syracuse loss last year, but at some point in conference play, they're going to do one or two or three inexplicable things. Mental errors is the nice way to say it. Which kept the drive alive for SMU late in the game, right? Because it was the fourth down. Miami finds fun ways to self-destruct. Maybe the most interesting ways to self-destruct, as long as you are not a Miami fan. So we just need to remind ourselves every year they're going to be God tier in September, and then they are going to do something to themselves, which is what they did in this game, to remove themselves from postseason consideration.
Yeah, there's a lot of heat today, too. Well, last night as well, just on social, about Mr. Carson Beck, 6 interceptions in the last 3 games. He threw the overtime interception, and then late in the game in Louisville, I think they were driving, and he threw the interception late in that game as well. So,
Did you know that Mendoza is from Cristobal's? Is it from his high school?
Yes.
The quarterback of Indiana.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Interesting. It's interesting, guys, here. Did you guys remember how Georgia pretty much helped Carson Beck pack his bags? You guys remember that?
Georgia also did inquire about Fernando Mendoza, but he didn't he didn't go there. That's because ironic. He wasn't sure if Gunnar Stockton was going to get a shot at the job. So
it's just maybe, you know, I said this on a couple places on social media yesterday. Miami really embodies the idea of, like, just because you're rich doesn't mean you're intelligent. Like, they are equal parts making like moneyed and aggressive in NIL these last couple of years, but they're also making maybe systemically flawed decisions that cost them. And I think the quarterback position, it's not so much Beck. Mm-hmm. It's just that, like, I think it's okay that we can't get over the price tag for what we're seeing. I think it's okay to talk about it that way.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. We talk about it the same thing, same way with Texas Tech this year. Miami's been that talking point for a few years. And the thing is, Miami, just the way they started the season and that win against Notre Dame and then, you know, coming into ACC play, you were like, okay, mm-hmm. this is finally the difference. And look, like the win against Notre Dame, if you go back to that game, it was managed very well by Mario Cristobal. So you think maybe they're turning the page, maybe they're turning a corner. And then you just see the same thing again. And I'll bring it up now, because we do need to talk about the rest of the ACC, what this means for that. And then there was another huge result in the ACC. But the Notre Dame of it all is very interesting, because Notre Dame is now blocked by Miami. They're both on pace to go 10-2. Now, Miami could lose another game. Notre Dame could lose another game because they both play Pitt. And by the way, Pitt is 5-0 since moving to Mason Heinchel as his starting quarterback. So
just unbelievable.
Yeah. So they might both lose and it takes care of it, or Miami might lose and it takes care of it for Notre Dame. But right now, if Miami's not in your playoff bracket, Notre Dame's not in your playoff bracket, because they would be 10-2 and Miami won the game. And you can say, well, Notre Dame's best win is USC. Cool. Miami's best win is Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, they'll probably stumble one or two more. It's funny now, because Notre Dame was probably rooting for Miami to win, and now they're probably rooting for Miami to lose. The Miami thing, like, I think I said this maybe after the Florida State game, because I covered the Florida State Miami game, and then I covered the Notre Dame Miami game, and one of the concerns was in the second half, like, Miami couldn't close the door on either game. They left it ajar, right? Notre Dame came all the way back to tie the game, and then Florida State came all the way back to potentially have a, you know, onside kick to try to do something with it, you know? And like in this game, Miami had the lead, two leads in the second half. It's like maybe 17 or 20-17 or something like that, 17-14, and just like couldn't close it out. And that's what we saw early in the year. But in this one, you know, SMU actually did it, and that it's just, I don't know what the deal is there, because we know how talented the roster is. And certainly the criticisms will come at Mario Cristobal again. Obviously he's had missteps and in-game management, like we've talked about quite a bit. And they didn't spend all this money. Like, this was supposed to be the year. Like, these 2 years, right, were supposed to sort of be the year. They had stacked up on linemen, and they have incredible receivers, and they went out and got the transfer quarterback the last 2 years, and they're potentially going to miss the playoffs both year.
They are missing the playoffs. They're seventh in the ACC. This isn't, I mean, like, we would need to move heaven and earth to make this happen. I mean, right now, Virginia is still undefeated. Mm-hmm. They have the inside track to go to Charlotte, which is a sentence.
Undefeated in ACC play, which we need to point out to people, because they're going to look at Virginia's schedule and go, wait, they lost to NC State, though. But that was
a non-conference conference game.
Yeah. Look, I didn't say it was a well-assembled conference, okay? Yeah. I just said that this is what's going on. Georgia Tech yesterday, they spent their loss. They certainly did. Might want to work on that defense a bit. NC State and Dave Doran, I know we kind of relegated him to the retirement status or getting fired or whatever, but man, they put it on them offensively. I don't want to contextualize everything by Miami. There are six teams in front of them in the ACC, six teams ahead of them in conference record. Duke had a kind of inexplicable win yesterday. Bill Connolly does his like post-game win expectancy, and Duke had one of the lowest, I think the lowest of the week, essentially. Like, there are some serious issues we can talk about in another segment in the ACC, because Florida State and Clemson are going to play each other, and it's probably going to be to see who makes a bowl. Like, this is an insane year for the ACC.
Well, congratulations to the Noles for their 42-7 win against Wake Forest, which
they're back. The Noles are back.
Did not see that coming at all.
Not guaranteed. I mean, it's just crazy, because like, we haven't talked about Louisville. We, you know, like, Pitt is suddenly unbeatable. This is, I think, what I thought the Big 12 would be this year. Not that the Big 12 isn't volatile and weird, but the ACC is doing its best to emulate the Big 12.
So let's play a little game, because you mentioned Georgia Tech lost to NC State, and it was a bad loss. I mean, NC State just clobbered them all night.
Yeah, dude, Haynes King is going to die. I'm legit worried.
I felt so bad for him watching the fourth quarter of that game. So I want everybody on the panel, give me your two teams that will play for the ACC title.
Oh, my gosh.
Come on.
I got to look at schedule. Man, you're going to make me work and like
look at it. I'll start because I've done. I was looking through this last night. So I have a pretty good idea of what everybody's remaining schedule is. I am going to say that the ACC title game will be between Louisville and Georgia Tech.
Okay.
Okay.
Here's why it's hard, and I'll just do this while Ross looks. It's hard for me to pick against number one versus number two right now because Virginia's 5-0. So right. Again, we can spend.
But they have lived dangerously.
No doubt. I'm not saying they're a known quantity, but they're 5-0 in conference play. They have Wake at home. They're at Duke, and then obviously they have Virginia Tech, which is not nothing. But this does feel like the year where that narrative is going to be the inverse.
Yes.
Georgia Tech doesn't matter for the ACC championship if they lose to Georgia. And they are at BC, a woeful BC team, and home for Pitt.
Yeah.
I'm tempted to go Pitt's going to be violent. Extremely violent is what it's going to be. It's going to look like a Ravens-Steelers game. I'm tempted to just say Virginia-Georgia Tech, Ross.
As I'm scouring here. Yeah, the problem with, I was actually tempted to say because of the remaining schedules, SMU would find a way in there, but they do play Louisville. You know, they have to play Louisville. They host Louisville, which is interesting. And I think Louisville is the best team in the league. So I think I'd agree with Andy that, you know, that Louisville is going to be one of the ones that make it there.
Louisville-Pitt would be a fun, it'd be a rematch, by the way.
Yeah, the Pitt schedule is like probably the most difficult remaining.
Yes.
They have to get Miami, they get Georgia Tech, and of course they play the non-conference game against Notre Dame after a bye week. I'm gonna go with Louisville and Duke.
I'm gonna say Duke gets there.
They're in a roll, and their schedule sets up a little better than maybe some others.
It's gonna be wild, and now because I do want to. We're just setting the playoff table here. We're gonna talk Hugh Freeze and Auburn in the next segment. But in the last segment, we are going to kind of preview what the rankings are going to look like. So this is helpful. The rankings don't necessarily determine what happens because as like you've seen with the ACC, like Virginia is going to be ranked above some of these teams. We're not sure they can survive. And that's going to be what's interesting. So in the Big 12, you had Texas Tech go on the road and beat Kansas State. Utah beat Cincinnati, which that give Cincinnati its first conference loss. You're going to have BYU going to Lubbock this coming week. Game day is going to be there.
Yeah, it's game of the week.
Yeah, if Texas Tech beats BYU, they're in the driver's seat. If BYU beats Texas Tech, they are in the driver's seat. And I think the Big 12 is looking more like the two-bid league than the ACC. Am I wrong?
No, I can see that. I can see that. It depends on how I would like to see what the game looks like, sort of the game story looks like on BYU Texas Tech. If it's lopsided, I think it works against your theory. But I can see those two teams getting in. I think with the amount of pressure in Lubbock, I mean, this would be relief if you were Joey McGuire to hear that it's a two-bid league, because I feel like the mandate is he has to get in the playoffs. Sell me on why the ACC's not.
I don't know that it's not. I'm not sure everybody can survive.
Okay. Okay.
Talk about how Pitt's playing and they look unbeatable right now, but their schedule's so hard the rest of the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of a reservoir dog. Yeah,
and what if SMU knocks off Louisville? Like that's the thing. There's landmines for everybody.
Right. Right.
In watching a team like Houston yesterday and Cincinnati yesterday, I do feel like the Big 12 is probably not done trading losses at the top, and they might also just, I said reservoir dogs earlier, just kind of knock you know, take care of each other in a big circle.
The Virginia plays at Duke. I can't believe I'm saying this. It'll be a huge game.
Yeah,
it will be a huge game. You're exactly
Virginia
right, Ross.
Virginia at Duke, man.
There is no mandate against. There's no mandate against Mario Cristobal, Ross, but that's not a conversation we should be having. But if I'm sitting in Coral Gables and I'm spending money like it's going out of style, I sure am noticing what's going on in Durham. Maybe he wasn't the problem, or wasn't the problem at all.
If I'm Pat Kraft, I'm noticing what's going on in Durham either.
Yes, sir.
I was just about to say, if he keeps winning,
that table.
If they go to the championship game, they're like 9-3, 10-2, and play for the ACC championship game. He's probably going to.
Oh my God, Andy,
job,
he's their Elko. You know, so.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. What happened the last time a team hired their former defensive coordinator who became
from
the head coach at Duke?
From Duke. Oh my God. He's their Elko.
There you go.
I'd literally spend hours on the phone every day, and this has not clicked in my head. Yes, there's your Elko.
I'm so
Penn
glad
State.
That you're finally there with the rest of us.
Your aha moment.
Yes.
Well, I mean, like all these other kids. Okay, we'll dive into this for a hot second. Penn State is, I think, suffering a little bit from home run disease, where they want to win a headline hire. Don't do that. We've done like six Elko segments on this show, imploring people to stop trying to win press conferences and win football games. There's your Huckleberry.
He's also got fabulous hair. Manny Diaz probably the best in-game hair.
Broadcast TV,
TV
background, and he knows it. He knows how to work that lens.
All right, we'll get back to this. This morass near the bottom of the playoff, like right near the cut line of the college football playoff, because college football playoff rankings reveal the first one is Tuesday night. We'll talk about what we think is going to happen, what we think that is going to look like a little bit later in the show. But when we come back, Hugh Freeze did exactly the thing he could not do, and things are looking very, very miserable in the loveliest village on the plains. We'll talk about Auburn when we come back. We're back at the College Football Inquirer. Just a reminder, if you want to see Ross's beanie or if you want to see the beautiful table setting behind me at this lovely Verbo in Columbus, Ohio, go to the Yahoo Sports Network. You can turn on your smart TV. You'll see the Yahoo Sports Network icon in your home screen. Also, anytime, day or night, tablet, phone, you name it, go to yahoosports.tv and you can watch all the shows from the Yahoo Sports Network, including the College Football Inquirer. Gentlemen, now we have to talk about Hugh Freeze. It has come to that time. We are recording this on Sunday morning.
Hugh Freeze? Okay.
Godfrey's favorite coach.
Let's go.
Freeze warning, guys.
We were recording this
in
on
a different
Sunday
way
morning.
Than normal.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, yes.
So I'm going to set the table real fast. Someone at Auburn sent me this, like, you know, from the moment they hired him, like, you know, you do like game day graphics and stuff. And so Ross brought this up, so I have to mention this. Like all of Auburn's like programs and Twitter graphics and stuff would all be freeze warning. And it was always like icy stuff. And if you put them all next to each other week by week over the Freeze tenure, you see when they lose faith in Hugh Freeze, because it starts going back to it goes from ice blue to orange, like a perfect gradient.
No.
All right, Andy.
The ice melted? What happened?
I'll tell you what happened.
The Kentucky heat wave happens. Came in. Yeah, Kentucky. Yeah. The likes of Kentucky came in and won a game. That was... Sorry, Andy, set the scene for us as you do.
I have so many fun stats. You just let me know.
Oh, I'm ready for all of them. Okay, it is Sunday morning as we're recording this. No one has been fired. I'm prefacing
that clear.
Now.
Technically.
We firmly expect this to happen. If it does not happen on Sunday, then it probably will happen next Sunday. But the way the game shook out, Kentucky goes down to Auburn. It's basically a loser leaves town match. Mark Stoops is not in great shape at Kentucky either. 10-3 Kentucky win is not what I had on the bingo card. It is quite possibly the worst potential outcome Hugh Freeze could have imagined. So the fact that it went down that way gives us fairly high confidence that this is happening at some point. All right, Godfrey, let's hear those stats.
Nathan King from 247. In Kentucky's SEC games this season, its opponents have scored 30 points, 35 points, 35 points, 16 points, and 56 points. Auburn has 3 points at halftime. All right, we'll move on.
Auburn finished with 3 points.
Justin Ferguson at Justin Ferguson AU. He has a Substack. You should subscribe if you're an Auburn fan. Against the worst and second worst defenses in the SEC, Auburn's offense has scored a grand total of one touchdown on 19 drives and counting. And the touchdown came on the very first drive.
Oh, my God. Right.
Wow.
Keep going. Hang on. Let me find,
Keep going. Okay.
Offensive EPA. I've described this before. If not, just Google it for brevity, okay? Auburn's offensive EPA in SEC play this season. This is also from Justin Ferguson. Oklahoma, -6.3. Texas A&M, -20.17. Georgia, -11.47. Missouri, in the positive, 0.69. Arkansas, in the positive, 1.27. Kentucky, -12.61. The cumulative total is -48.6, and the average per game is -8. The only two positive games were barely above zero. What that means is essentially you would actually have to actively work to create an offense this ineffective.
They should punt on first down every time, is what he's saying. You're better off playing defense.
This is one of the, certainly if we're just capping the last 4 years of like the portal era or the NIL era or whatever, this is one of the most, it's certainly the worst ROI offense of the portal era.
Yes. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah,
we'll start
absolutely.
There.
And the fact that Hugh Freeze started Ashton Daniels, pulled him for Jackson Arnold, and then pulled Jackson Arnold for Ashton Daniels again, and still only managed 3 points. That was
He's an offensive genius.
But
Andy.
Okay, here,
how can you argue?
You're saying that sarcastically. He was good at coaching offense. That's the part I can't get. At Liberty and Ole Miss,
He's had a lot of success everywhere he's been on offense. It's crazy. Yes. They've been so terrible. I don't even. By the way, I have a stat too. This is my favorite stat. God, for your stats,
go for it.
How about this one? This is from Brian Fisher at SI. Auburn has not allowed more than 24 points in any game this season. One of three teams nationally that can say that, with Ohio State in Indiana.
Oh my God.
Ohio State in Indiana. Having a lot of, that just tells you if they scored 24 points in every game offensively, they'd be undefeated.
This is like that year at State, Ross, with the when Joe Moorhead took over. It's similar, except Joe Moorhead is a competent offensive play caller.
Yeah.
Every single thing that Hugh Freeze has done from a decision making capacity with this offense since he arrived at this job has been incorrect. He is not suited for this era. He was brought in because he beat Nick Saban twice. I wrote about this as it related to Brian Kelly. We've talked about this several times this year. We are still shedding ourselves of impromptu, aggressive coaching decisions that were made in the waning days of the Saban era of college football. And this was one of them, because this guy beat Nick Saban twice. Once effectively and once basically on a lark, if you go back and look at that second 2015 Ole Miss win over Alabama. Some seriously fluky stuff.
Saban also started the wrong quarterback in that game.
He had to switch quarterbacks. There's a helmet bounce that, you know, ricochets a pass. There's all kind of nonsense in that game. Hugh Freeze built an entire career off of that. He was offensively talented as a play caller, yes, Andy, but no more so than I would say 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 others. And when he was hired at Auburn, you could have gotten the same offensive acumen with a better understanding of the coming market for personnel, for the portal, for NIL, also just for program management. But you chose not to because this guy beat Nick Saban twice. You got zero ROI off of that. You were chasing a ghost that you didn't need to chase. Now, you didn't know that Nick Saban was going to retire at the time. But they probably should have gotten rid of him last year. And bringing back, I'm sorry to isolate a single player because these guys are still kids, bringing back Jackson Arnold. Guys, Andy, why are we having this conversation about Oklahoma right now? Why couldn't Auburn have gone to Wazoo? I know the answer to this, so it is rhetorical. Why couldn't Auburn have gone to Wazoo and found a hot young coordinator and a promising quarterback? And I'll tell you why. It's Hugh Freeze's hubris. It's his ego, and it's the ability for Freeze to stack his scams throughout his career is based on him convincing himself he's the smartest person in the room. I've made the joke on the show before, but don't they have some sort of multifaceted assistant system where like one guy calls a play on first down, one guy calls
third down.
Doesn't work.
Which is not what happens. Hugh Freeze calls the plays.
Exactly.
The original sin here was bringing back Peyton Thorne. Well, the original sin was hiring Hugh Freeze, when he's not suited for the era, I think is probably. But I was wrong about Hugh Freeze because I thought he'd be fine. I thought he would be the guy who got the most out of Malik Willis and who got the most out of Chad Kelly. And so I'll take the blame on that one too, because I thought he'd be fine. But when he kept Peyton Thorne the second year and said, we're not going to spend money on a quarterback, when they probably could have spent money, like they could have gotten in the Cam Ward sweepstakes if they'd have wanted to. They chose not to.
They chose not to time and again. And the first phone call I got from someone very close to the program who, after the hire, said, Godfrey, you were too close to it. You investigated Hugh Freeze at your alma mater and all this kind of stuff. You don't know. He's going to turn this around. That lasted a couple months. And the criticism started from inside the building at Auburn as soon as Hugh Freeze said, we're going to build out an all-star coaching staff. And you know what he did? He hired the same cronies and yes men were the only guys who would work for him because they knew what kind of environment they were getting into. Auburn never had an all-star coaching staff. To look and see what Kalen DeBoer put together at Alabama by comparison is yet another reason why Auburn should be embarrassed. That started months in. And then when you got to personnel management and their inability to look at the market, NIL, portal, any of the freaking markets I'm talking about, this is what happened. His best hire is DJ Durkin.
Right.
His
best hire. Who needed a job because Jimbo Fisher got fired at Texas A&M.
Yes. Who has his own baggage from Maryland. Okay. His best hire, to Ross's statistical point earlier, is keeping him alive only for him. This is like a saw trap or like one of those deaths in seven. It's designed to be the most painful thing for him because he's the offensive genius. Auburn is playing defensive football that is the likes of Tommy Tuberville or Pat Dye. This is Auburn football on one side of the ball. And then the guy who's supposed to be, remember, you got tired of Gus Malzahn. You said he wasn't suited. We're going to start the buyout era. We're going to eat all this money because we're Auburn and we're better than Gus Malzahn. You have not been better than Gus Malzahn since the day you wrote that check. You have been a punchline. And you hired the guy who is capable of embarrassing you the most. The only thing he hasn't had is a scandal sitting in office. He does have a tea time this afternoon at Auburn, though it's all over social media.
I knew the golf was coming up. I knew it. I knew the golf was coming in there.
I have to pause.
Don't post your scores publicly,
tea.
Coaches. Yeah, it's badly. Yeah.
The wife, right? It was Jill. Freeze's,
it's Jill. Jill has a tea time today, but that's publicly available information.
At 1:30. So. Turning the page, like we talked a lot about how busy this carousel is, and now we're going to have what I would say is another top 15 job probably on the market. That probably number four, the fourth top 15.
Because Auburn has
open
a good
coaching
roster.
Job.
Mm-hmm. Auburn's been willing to spend on players. Whoever they hire is going to have an opportunity to build a nice roster. And I'm not saying retain this roster. I have no idea if they'll retain this roster. We have to start talking about it that way. When you say, oh, well, you're bringing back. No. We don't know what you're bringing back. You have to hire the coach first. You have to make the offers financially. Yeah. And then we'll find out who you're bringing back. But Auburn has shown that they are willing to pay and willing to work to get a very talented roster.
They have gone above and beyond with like the resource to the roster. Look at they moved a game.
It's from not game. Auburn Stadium. It's not Auburn's fault. It's not even John. It's not John Cohen's fault. It's one guy's fault. This is the easiest. This is the easiest one we've done this year. Even this is easier than Billy Napier, Andy. This is easier than Billy Napier. And by the way, I'd like to point out one score from the American Athletic Conference. Mm-hmm. UTSA walloped Tulane.
Wow.
Yeah. 48-26. Guess what that means? It means that Tulane has a stronger chance than not of missing the playoff. Which means a certain individual is going to be available. The lab-made Auburn head coach.
Yeah.
The winner of the sweepstakes can still be Auburn, guys. Just hire John Summerall. I've had two people call him Pat Dye 2.0 as a compliment. Yeah. It's an Auburn thing. Just the rest of us don't get it. But this is so easy to fix your program.
I was going to say, are they going to find John Summerall's pants in the water hazard of a golf course 30 years later? Is that what you're trying to tell me? No, I you're right about that, guys.
I feel like John would create some good lore in Southeast Alabama. Yes.
The thing about Summerall is, I agree with you, right? I think it makes perfect sense. He's from Alabama. He's just got the whole Pat Dye thing. I mean, he would fit really well. He would also be a complete opposite of what John Cohen's ever hired in his coaching, in his athletic director toward a tenure. Think of Joe Moorhead, Mike Leach, and Hugh Freeze. It's like always the sort of offensive, sort of innovator, creative guy. So he'd be going against everything, and maybe that's what they need to do.
Well, if John screws this up, his ass should be on the street too, and Auburn is so far out of patience that if he doesn't make the layup higher this time, God help you, because no one else on the planes will.
The guy out there that would be like the Cohen sort of hire, that compared to how what he's done in the past, it was like Eli or Jeff Brom or somebody like that.
Right.
Those would be fine too, by the way.
Would Eli Drinkwitz leave Missouri for Auburn right now? I don't even know.
Yeah, it's a good question. Yeah.
I think Brom.
Would Brom leave his home? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know that either. I don't know. They could be playing the playoffs.
Let's sidestep that for now. Let's wait till they put him.
And Brom may have other offers too. Let's not other discount offers.
Yeah,
that.
And yes. Playing deep.
Brom might be
December?
Busy in December too.
Who knows? Yeah,
that's
Brom,
true.
Brom might be worried about a first round game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is going to get very interesting. Although I'm with Godfrey. The John Summerall thing feels too easy. It feels like such a layup. And you know, you look historically at Auburn, Well, Shug Jordan too, but you know, Pat Dye is sort of the archetype that Auburn people want in their coach. Tuberville was a defense forward guy who had a lot of success. Gus was an offensive guy who had a lot of success, but Gus's was more up and down. You know, we give the Chizik national title to Gus, don't we? Is that fair?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I don't have anything against Gene, but yeah, I mean,
yeah. So. It's interesting. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
Andy, you give it to Cam.
Exactly. It is Cam's. It is Cam's national title. Yes,
that's the most
true.
NBA I've ever seen a college football team. Yeah, because that's like a 6-6 football team that won a national championship because one guy was absolutely unstoppable. It was like watching a LeBron team.
Yeah. So you can win at Auburn either way if you go offense or defense. But you don't have to go offense, to your point. And it does seem John Cohen, that's where he leans heavily. But we will find out, because we're going to have a very active coaching carousel. Like I said, it's Sunday morning. Nothing's happened yet on the planes that we know of, but it's entirely possible it could be happening sometime today. What will be happening, we know will be happening on Tuesday, is that the College Football Playoff Selection Committee will reveal its rankings for the first time this season. Any surprises coming? What do we think it's going to look like? We'll break it down next. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and big stuff coming on Tuesday. Of course, we'll have an episode. But that episode will break down something very interesting. You've got the first college football playoff ranking reveal of the season. And guys, I think we know what it's going to look like at the top. Like, can we agree that Ohio State and Indiana will be 1-2?
Yeah.
All right.
I would hope so.
I would hope so. I mean, I think A&M will have some argument, I'm sure, in the room, right? There's 12 people in the room. So somebody's going to argue that A&M is better than one of those two, if not both, probably.
I'm kind of hoping
there's not going to be enough people, probably.
I'm kind of hoping Indiana's one, just to like, ooh, man, just for the feels, like people get mad about that.
That'll they're doing best win,
right?
Mm-hmm. Indiana's one. Yes. And they have the same records. I mean, that's why I got Indiana. I've been having Indiana one in my like top 10 for like 3 weeks because they have the best win. It's on the road at Oregon, and probably overall schedule strength. I mean, I don't know if overall schedule strength is probably Ohio State. I haven't looked at the metrics on that or whatever, the Sagarin like schedule, strength of schedule, because they opened with Texas, and Texas has been pulling off these crazy wins. So I would assume it's still Ohio State barely, but this one single win, it's Indiana.
The good news is that between now and the final rankings, the Big Ten has not provided us as fun an inventory of like television product as the SEC has, but oh my God. That conference championship game is going to be fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, it really will. Yeah, and if you look at it,
because it's going to be one versus two.
Yeah, and you look at Indiana and Ohio State's the rest of their schedule, and this is a pretty much cakewalk. I think somebody, hold on, I've got the stats here. Somebody had sent me this earlier today.
Michigan fans, Ross called it a cakewalk. I did not call it a cakewalk.
Indiana and Ohio State
listening right now. Just need to beat Michigan fans. I did not say that.
Need to beat teams with a combined record. Big Ten record of 4-23.
Woo!
This is to lock up spots in the playoffs. So, it's considering you'll lose one game, so it's probably not counting.
Right,
it's not counting the Michigan game. So,
I was gonna say, how many wins does Michigan have of those four? All of them? So yeah,
Andy, you know what? Looking at the Big Ten standings makes me want to jump back to the previous segment. Mm-hmm. How many bids is the Big Ten gonna get?
It's an interesting question, and I think it comes down to how Michigan, Iowa, and USC finish the season, because I think one of them could get in, but it is not going to be easy for any of them to get in, because Michigan has to beat Ohio State. Like, that's the only way. So that's going to be very difficult. Iowa would have to beat Oregon and USC.
Yeah.
USC would have to beat Iowa and Oregon.
But I know we're sort of penciling in Oregon as that third team, right? But
Oregon get knocked out.
They play at Iowa, and weird things happen, and I'm thinking that could be trouble.
Well, that's the thing. If Iowa and USC get into the playoff, they've knocked Oregon out.
Yeah, right.
I wrote off Iowa just beat each other after Iowa State. I made fun of Iowa, but like I wrote them off after the Iowa State game, and they are quietly just so Iowa this year. And that could be a pejorative or a compliment. In this case, it's a compliment.
Oh, I think it's a compliment. They're the the best possible Iowa right now.
Okay, so you guys do 1, 2, 3. You guys rank them weekly, and I just complain about it. So what are y'all's 1, 2, 3, 4 on Tuesday night?
So I think it's going to be one, either Ohio State or Indiana. 1, 2 will be Ohio State and Indiana.
Okay,
some order.
Yeah.
Then A&M.
Okay.
Then Alabama. Bama.
Then Alabama.
Then Georgia.
So basically the conference championship games.
Yeah, the top five to me are pretty easy, right? Ohio State, Indiana, Texas A&M, Alabama, Georgia. And then you get into a question of, you have a grouping of the Oregon, Ole Miss sort of.
Yeah, and I think you can put Oregon or Ole Miss wherever you want to.
Yeah,
like in whatever order.
It doesn't. The really big question for me is, what's the highest ranked ACC team?
It's a great question, because it's probably Virginia.
Yeah.
But where? Yeah. Yeah. Where's Virginia wind up? Like, does Virginia wind up ranked number 12 or number 13?
Yeah.
Because they've lived dangerously. Like, their best win is Louisville. The overtime win against Louisville.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they played in overtime against Florida State. They played in overtime against North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
It was a three-point game in the fourth quarter yesterday against Cal until they pulled away. They scored a touchdown late. So I keep thinking Virginia's going to stumble, but they don't. And I don't know. I think they're going to be the highest ranked one.
Yeah, either them another or Georgia Tech, probably.
Another result from yesterday, because I'm trying to figure out who the 12 is. Navy is no longer undefeated. They lost to North Texas. Memphis has they're 8-1, 7-1. They're neck and neck. But Memphis has the Arkansas win.
And the USF and the win. South I think Memphis' Florida USF win is the biggest one.
So I think Memphis is still the 12.
Yeah.
Because
which won't be 12 in the rankings. They're gonna be lower than 12 in the rankings.
Yeah,
but
I just call it
Right. Yeah, they'll probably be like 12.
The G5 team's always gonna be the 12. No one's ever gonna convince me they won't be. But yes, like
except they weren't last year. Boise State was 9th.
Yeah.
Boise State was ranked in the final ranking.
That's right. Yeah, they ended up being they got the bye. Yeah.
That's a fluke. I'm still convinced of the conspiracy. That does nothing to deter me. Facts don't stand in the way. It's going to be really interesting to see down the stretch if James Madison runs the table. Can they catch them?
Mm. Yeah.
But what if Louisville wins the ACC?
Right. That's their only loss.
And that's your only loss.
Yeah. Yeah. And the problem then was they played with him for three quarters.
I watched that game. It was good. The problem is, it's really going to come down to what quality could you offer up in terms of your wins, and it's a really mixed situation in the Sun Belt this year. So I think Memphis still has the inside track.
Yeah,
and Memphis plays Tulane on Friday night, so a lot of that's going to get worked out as well. Memphis
and plays Tulane's coming off
at the end of the year.
Yeah, Tulane's coming off of a loss. Could be interesting to see if Navy has Notre Dame. I'm not saying it's impossible. Mm-hmm. Navy has Notre Dame. Let's say they win that. You could have a situation that no one ever thought would happen, which is that you would have the playoff seeds done. Navy gets in and still has a regular season game against Army to play.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Could happen.
So talked about the G5 and the ACC. What about the Big 12? Like, I don't know where BYU is ranked. I think like 10 in the AP. I want to say, like,
I will. I think I wonder where the committee probably would be like, can we just do this next week after BYU plays Texas Tech?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it'd be a lot easier.
Yeah.
So it sounds like y'all keep going back to this, and this feels like what we should educate people on, sort of what you're actually looking for. And it's not so much the names next to the numbers. It seems like you guys are trying to figure out where you're slotting the very top of the ACC and the Big 12 in relation to the middle of the field in the Power 2.
Right. Because that's going to tell us who has a real chance of getting in as an at-large. Because let's say I don't think anybody in the audience of this show doesn't know this, but I've been very surprised throughout the year at how many people who do seem to follow college football very closely don't realize this yet. The rule has changed in terms of how they seed the playoff. You do not have to be a conference champion to get a top four seed anymore. You did last year. That was designed for a five power conference system where the five power conferences were all fairly even. Obviously, the world changed, so they changed the rule. So now the top four seeds are going to be, or the top four teams in the ranking are going to be the top four seeds. They will get the byes. It can be two Big Ten teams and two SEC teams. It can be Notre Dame could be one of them. They won't this year, but they could be theoretically going forward. So just remember that. And yeah, Godfrey, what Ross and I are trying to figure out is this is more bid counting. Like if you put the highest ranked ACC team at number 11, then it means you think the ACC is probably a one bid league.
Right. I would also point out, just to piggyback what Andy said as a reminder, we might have a 180 in the sort of abrupt reaction to last year's seeding and people being mad about Arizona State and Boise, because if I had to do 1 through 4, it's probably going to be the winner and loser of the Big Ten Championship and the winner and loser of the Southeastern Conference Championship game. And what impact does that create? And what lessening of impact is that on the conference championship system, which would be fun because we get to talk about that for 9 months.
God. Oh,
yes.
It's true, though. It because if you know they're both going to get byes, like we're very excited to see Ohio State play Indiana because we feel like they've been on this collision course. But if you know they're both going to get byes and that the result of that game is not going to affect them very much.
It
either way
defeats the purpose of the title game, which was so a lot of people want it eliminated. I mean, there's a lot of people in the rooms in the SEC AD room and the Big Ten AD room that want to see conference championship games go away. And Andy, I'll segue this into some news that happened earlier this week. Not that it was groundbreaking news, but about CFP expansion. And obviously, there was a lot made the last few months about the Big Ten sort of proposal that it was been socializing to have a 20-plus team, specifically 24-team CFP, and that would necessitate the elimination of the conference championship games. Well, the SEC ADs had in-person meetings this past week in Birmingham, where CFP was discussed. They did not discuss, and it doesn't sound like, plan to consider anything beyond 16 teams.
Good. So kill right that 24 now, with fire.
The expectation is that we will be at 12 teams for next year until the Big Ten and SEC can come up with some kind of new format. They have to agree. And right now the Big Ten wants, 20 plus teams or a 16 team format that has a bunch of, AQs for individual leagues. And the SEC wants a 16 team that's 5 plus 11, 11 at large and 5 AQs for
Here's a crazy
one
idea. Just keep the 12 that they've got now and just do that for 20 years and see how it goes.
Yeah.
Stop overreacting.
At least
you're
for
all
one more.
Money.
At least for more than 2 years.
You're all going to make
for
your
a
money.
Third year.
The problem, it's funny though. Like a previous host of the show, Dan Wetzel's book, like one of the craziest parts of the BCS era, he wrote in Death of the BCS was the perpetual revision. Every single year, there was a significant tweak to the BCS formula, and that created. Maybe you should pay attention to the past here, power brokers listening. That created a distrust of the system because every single year there was a referendum and adjustment, often unnecessarily so. Ross, you mentioned something I just want to ask. Do you think there will ever be a consensus amongst like the old heads of the Southeastern Conference that conference championship games should go away? Because I know the SEC, they put out the economic impact study and they talk about how financially valuable that game is. Yep. Like
TV people say it's $70, $80, $90 million, the value of that one single game. I mean, it's a lot of money. So to answer your question, yes, eventually
it's going to get to the point, and probably with things that we're talking about right now, where the championship game is not going to matter at all because both teams will get a bye potentially. Like, if that happens too many times, that is going to change the in the president's room, I think, the momentum to get rid of the championship games. And then you have your first round. If you expand the playoff, you have your first round and championship weekend potentially, or at least you have, you know, you move everything up 1 week potentially to have on first week of December have the first round, either one. But yeah, I think that will happen eventually. But, you know, changing quickly is not one of the sort of what am I trying to think here?
Trademarks, hallmarks.
Hallmarks of not just college sports in general, but like the Southeastern Conference footprint in its
neither is logic, presidents but they persevere and they still make money, so it is possible. It does seem like we're moving, like they got what they wanted. Everybody was super pissed off about Arizona State and Boise. You may have, be careful what you wish for, because these conference championship games, and I'm not trying to advocate against or for them. Sometimes they're fantastic. There's a lot of great memories. We can rattle off some amazing conference championship games. It does feel like they are standing in contrast to the way in which the best postseason we've ever had is moving.
Yeah, I go back. I was actually surprised. Like, I went back and looked at the ratings of the SEC championship game from last year. I was shocked at how well it did.
This league's conference championship game is a cultural benchmark. It's a cultural touchstone. The way, more so than any other conference championship game. I've been to some really cool and amazing games in Indianapolis in the Big Ten. It's not the same thing. The SEC conference championship game, it does matter to a lot of people, hence the stupid tagline. That one I just feel like would die pretty hard amongst a lot of supporters, a lot of boosters. People get excited to go to Atlanta.
Yeah. It would be the last one to go.
And they want to, like, and one of the things Greg said, I wrote a big story about the future of the conference championship games last December, and Greg Sankey told me, and he said it, repeated it for the last couple of years, is one of the other things to think about is the tiebreakers to pick your regular season conference champion and how difficult that is, especially with the schedules being so dissimilar from one another, is picking a regular season conference champion. So I agree, Andy. It'll probably be like the last one to fall eventually. If they don't all do it at one time, if they don't all agree on some big expansion years from now at one time. Hey, man, I said it, when was it, in August when that report leaked out about the 24 and 28? I think we said it here, like, this is not going anywhere anytime soon, because I knew at the time, and it's confirmed this week, the SEC is SEC president's room, and the SEC commissioner is not considering anything beyond 16. It's just right now, at least, it's not. And the Big Ten wants that, and they're at a disagreement. And because of the stalemate, we have what a lot of people want, which is to stay
right. I would say
I can't believe
the audience
advocating
doesn't
this.
Want what the Big Ten wants, which you know, and I'm sure there's a lot of people who don't like the SEC, who don't like being on the SEC side on this. But you guys should link arms, and you can fight it back.
I feel that way. I can't believe I'm advocating for the SEC here, but in general, the progress of college football as an industry doesn't follow the path of taking away money-making things. And this conference championship structure is a money-making thing. So you would have to compensate the SEC accordingly, who is the biggest predator in the room, you know, like they're top of the food chain. That stuff usually doesn't happen in college sports.
Yeah, and you can, like, that has been sort of one of the talking points. You can I think you could probably make up the money, but as Andy said, I don't know you can make up, like, all right, no, I'm sorry, Godfrey, you mentioned the cultural sort of feel to it and all that, what it means to people. You can't make up that. Like, you're not going to make up that part of it, and you're not going to be able to crown a regular season champion in a better way than playing on the field. So you can make up money with an expanded playoff, and they've talked about that. Like, I think there's been proposals presented where they can make up that 60, 70, 80 million, whatever it is. You lose the other stuff, can't replace it.
Yeah. So I think the SEC will fight for it, and I think they will hold out for a long time, which probably will keep the playoff smaller, which is fine with me. Like, I'm good with 12. They don't need to go to 16 either. Like, just keep it where it is. This is actually kind of fun. Like, determining who's in, who's out, what the rankings are going to look like. I enjoy this. I don't know that this is enjoyable if you go, like, it was 16, you could probably still enjoy it. If you go past 16, it's no fun anymore. Like, what 24 teams are going to get into the playoff? Who's going to get the Big Ten sixth at-large spot? Like, we don't need that. Let's not do that. So let's just enjoy this. Enjoy the games. We got big games this week. We got the college football playoff committee rankings coming out on Tuesday. We have a ton to talk about. And instead of thinking about how much bigger the playoff can be, we'll just enjoy the 12 team one we got right now. And we will talk to you guys on Tuesday.